Well, if rock's your game, you're in the right place. This is Metal Mike, and in this episode, we're going to rank the Kiss albums 74 to 82, man. The makeup albums, the classic era. I'm joined by my buddy, Johnny Hawk, and we talk about it all, man. We have a blast. We don't always agree, though, and we talk about Johnny's project, KLA Fractured Mirror. It's a Kiss tribute album that was done for charity. I'm actually on there. We'll put a link in the description on how you can get a copy. Well, check this thing out. All right. Well, Johnny, welcome to the 80s Glam Metal Cast. How are you, brother?
I'm doing fantastic. How you doing, brother?
I am doing great, man. So glad to be talking with you tonight. It's going to be a great one. We're going to be talking about the makeup albums of Kiss, a top 10, man. And to me, this is my favorite era of the band. Even though it's 80s Glam Metal Cast, I gravitate for the 70s and early 80s albums. Well, how about you?
Well, see, I went and seen them in 1975 and went 90 times I've seen them in concert all the way through to the 2000s. So,
wow.
My whole life I've been listening to all of it, but I think I gravitate towards the original stuff myself.
For sure, man. It's the best. It is the best. Before we jump into this, though, let's talk a little bit about this tribute album you put together. It's KLA, Fractured Mirror. I got involved a little bit myself. I helped you with a few tracks. Tell everybody about how this all came to be, why you did this. Just throw it out there.
Sure, absolutely. So, as you all know, I put a lot of Kiss videos out on YouTube of me just jamming some Kiss songs. And, you know, I did a lot of videos, and then this guy who plays the drums got in touch with me and said, hey, do you want to do a collaboration? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So we started jamming together and did a few videos together. And then he said to me, I know a bass player that can join us too. And so the collaboration world started opening up for me. And I belong to this group on Facebook called the KLA, which stands for Kiss Live Auctions. And it's a group of guys that sells their Kiss memorabilia to other Kiss members who don't have certain products or whatever. And I figured, hey, there's 6,000 members in this group. There's got to be some musicians out there. So I put the word out saying, hey, would anybody be interested in doing a collaboration album with me, much like the videos that I've been doing on YouTube? And I got an enormous reaction from all these guys saying, hey, I am a musician. I would love to do it. But I didn't want to do it for just the sake of putting a CD out. So I decided to come up with the idea of making 100% of the proceeds go into a charity, which is breast cancer research.
That's awesome. Does that hit home? Is your family been affected by breast cancer?
A dear friend of mine was, yeah. And yeah, She's no longer with us, so...
Yeah, yeah, definitely an evil disease, great cause. And what's cool about it, you know, whether you're doing these online covers or you're doing a project like this, you get the opportunity to play with people from all over the world. And it's kind of mind-boggling because if you think back to the, you know, 20 years ago or even more, you know, you never would have been able to do this. You can only play with folks that are down the street from you or whatever, you know. And now it's like the sky's the limit. You can jam with anybody. And for something like this, it makes it a little bit easier because we can all perform, you know, to the Kiss tracks and put our stuff together. I had a lot of fun with it. I know I did bass on a few songs, sang some vocals on a few, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was so happy that you were part of that project for sure. And one of the best things that I think with collaborations is, you were talking about 20 years ago, you can only jam with your buddies, is you could only jam with how good their talent is. Where if you're collaborating, I mean, the sky's the limit. You've got the whole world out there that you could play with.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of incredible talent out there. So I'm glad that I met you. I'm glad I met a whole bunch of these guys that are on this record. So
same here, man. And, you know, obviously you put a lot of work into it. One thing that stands out, it's really true to the subject matter. So it's fans, you know, being true to what Kiss originally did, but having fun with it. It's just a fun listen.
Absolutely, for sure.
Johnny, how can somebody get a hold of this? If they wanted a copy, what's the best way for them to do it?
Well, I got a Facebook page. Actually, what we could do is we're going to put a link at the bottom in the description of this video.
Yeah.
That'll take you right to that page. How's that sound?
Perfect. I think that's very easy. Very doable.
Yeah. Perfect.
All right, brother. Well, I'm curious of how this is all going to play out. You know, we probably have differing opinions. Sometimes I go against the grain of what's normal for KISS fans. So I'm curious to how this is going to play out. Let's just jump in, man. What is your number 10?
My number 10 from the first album, The Creatures.
KISS is hotter than hell.
I'm going to have to say probably hotter than hell.
Okay, hotter than hell. What puts that one down toward the bottom for you?
I think because of how many times I've listened to it. I may have overplayed it for myself.
Uh-huh.
There's some that definitely don't belong on the list at all. And hotter than hell, I think, probably just because there's not a lot of hits on it. I like all the I like all the hidden tracks anyways, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I think that's got to be number 10 for me.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't have that one at number 10. I've got that one on. Of course, they're all on the list, right? There is only 10 studio albums from the first one to Creatures, but I went with The Elder. And I know this probably seems like an easy pick to put The Elder here, but I don't know, man. It's just, I think with The Elder, you know, on paper, it sounds good. You know, like if somebody told you KISS is going to do a concept album about this, this, and this, and you'd say, oh, that sounds great. But I think overall the concept is weak. I feel that it's not fleshed out with the music, and they got rid of a lot of that in-between stuff. I mean, there's rumor that they recorded a lot of in-betweens to tell the story. They got rid of all that. They jumbled the order a couple different times, you know, upon its release. But, I don't know, man. There's just some bad songs out there, like Just a Boy. I don't get it. I don't like the weird choir in Under the Rose. It's just some stuff I just don't like it. And it's not very KISS, you know. But there are a few songs that are pretty KISS, you know. Like, I love The Oath. I love I love Mr. Blackwell. So there's some cool stuff. I dig the image. I kind of appreciate what they were trying to do, but it just fell flat.
Fair enough, yep.
All right, man. How about number 9?
KISS. It's the album you've waited 2 years to hear. KISS Dynasty. It's the hot new, all-new album from Casablanca. KISS.
Number 9 would be Dynasty for me.
Oh, okay. Dynasty, you got low. What puts that one down there?
I think because of the change of direction.
Uh-huh.
And they went from a rock and roll band, all of a sudden they're now a disco band. And I know from when I was a kid, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
But my brother, who took me to the KISS concerts, turned on them and just hated them like everybody else did in that era. Mind you, I was 8 years old when it came out, so it didn't matter to me. It was still KISS, and I got to see them on TV and whatnot. However, you've got some weak songs on there.
Mm-hmm.
Sure Know Something is one of them. What was that Peter Criss song that was on?
Dirty Livin',
right. So that kind of stuff, that was what really brings it down low on the threshold for me. 2000 Man, if I never heard that song again, that would be fine. Mind you, on the flip side, we've got Charisma, Magic Touch, and Save Your Love, which I think are really strong KISS songs.
Yeah. 100%.
Absolutely. So could they have gone on to an earlier album and still fit it in? I think they could have.
Johnny, you're hurting me on this one because I really like Dynasty. I won't reveal where I placed it, but you're cutting me deep with that Dynasty. So my number 9, this is probably going to be sacrilegious to a lot of KISS fans, but
KISS, a new group, a new album. On Casablanca Records and Tape.
I want to put the debut, man, because, and here's why. Don't get me wrong. You kind of talk about like the hits and then kind of like the deep tracks, right? This thing is loaded with the hits. These are the songs that they played live from basically 1974 to today, you know? And I love them. I love Deuce and I love Strutter. I love all that stuff. But Cold Gin. But the thing is I don't like the renditions on this album. I think that's what kills me. This album just feels very slow. It just feels like kind of non-heavy. And that's probably being somebody who grew up on music in the 80s. And when I go back to it, you know, I'm used to just the fast versions on Alive and, you know, all the different things they've done. You know, even the way they played them on Animalize Live and stuff like that. I'm used to the faster and heavier versions of these songs. So this album just seems too slow for me. But I mean, I can't deny the songs. They're incredible songs, and it's iconic, and it's the debut. But just, I don't care for the speed of the songs and the way they're performed on this one.
Actually, if you listen to the version of Cold Gin on Double Platinum, they actually sped, or sorry, not Cold Gin, Firehouse, they actually sped it up because it was so slow on the debut.
Yeah, really, it's shocking. You know, you even think back to, Johnny, like something like Sydney, Australia, 1980. I mean, they're just, yeah, Eric Carr, he's just flying, you know what I mean? And I love those versions of those. And then you go back and you listen to this, and it's cool. You know, it's retro and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, just like, let's look at a little bit more up-tempo.
And it's funny that you say that that Kiss is number 9 for you, because it's actually number 8 for me.
Oh, okay. So, look, hey, let's hear it, man.
So we're fairly close with that one. So there's some strong songs on there. I think Black Diamond, 100,000 Years, and Deuce are probably the best songs on that record. Uh-huh. But then you've got Kissin' Time. Yeah. You've got Love Theme from Kiss. You've got Let Me Know. Yeah. To me, those aren't very strong songs.
No.
They're great for 1973 when they were written, released in 1974, but does it really stand the test of time like some of these other Kiss records do? My personal feelings is no, they don't. Yeah. And how they remain in a set list 50 years later, and people just love it. I mean, there's so many other songs that they could be playing.
No, they definitely gravitate toward those original songs that were big off that, and obviously had new life on Alive. So yeah, man, they're timeless for sure. All right, so this one is gonna irritate people, and I'm just gonna throw it out there, man. But I'm gonna put Destroyer at number 8, and I don't know. And then let me explain. Okay, all right. I think over time, I don't know. I feel like this album is slightly overrated. I think it starts killer, like three of their best tracks ever: Detroit Rock City, Into King of the Nighttime World, and then you got that creepy ass version, the original version of God of Thunder. I love it. I think it's amazing. I love what they're doing. They're adding new elements to their sound, and you know all the stuff that Bob Ezrin did. But dude, there's just a few throwaways on there, like Sweet Pain, My Love Will Drive You Insane. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's not a great song, and I don't care for Great Expectations either. You know what I mean? And then there's certain songs, right, like you said, if you never heard some of those first album, or no, you said 2000 Man. If you never heard 2000 Man Again, that's the way I feel about like Shout It Out Loud and Do You Love Me. Like, they're cool songs. They were cool like years ago when I heard them for the first time, but now it's like it's just played out. So I think it's a double edged sword. You know, some of it's just played out, and some of it, like when you're holding it into this iconic view, and you got stuff like, to me, Sweet Pain and Great Expectations. I just, and then something as killer as God of Thunder. I know Gene didn't write God of Thunder, but it personifies like who Gene is. And I think Great Expectations is just goofy. It's like, it's, and that's the same kind of shit that creeped up on his solo album. You know, it's just weird. I just don't care for it.
Wow.
I blew your mind.
It's definitely up higher on the list for me, that's for sure.
All right, man. What's your 7?
Unmatched.
Okay.
I love the record. One of my biggest things with it is Peter does not play on it at all.
Right.
Peter's got an amazing rock and roll voice, and to have him missing from an entire record, and not only vocally, but he doesn't play a single lick on the drums.
Yeah.
And that's one of my biggest issues with it.
Yeah, and it's noticeable. What do you think of the production?
It sounds to me like it's a demo record.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a bunch of demos. It doesn't have the sound that Dynasty had. It doesn't have the sound that Creatures of the Night had, where they actually put some time into producing this thing.
Yeah,
it sounds like it was kind of thrown together and let's get this out there for something for the fans.
Yeah,
and I feel like, I know this is an originals thing, but I feel the same way about Hot in the Shade. Mm. It's a demo record.
Yeah. Oh, Hot in the Shade, big time, big time. You know, a lot of drum machine and stuff like that on there. Yeah.
The sounds, yeah, exactly. So the sound suffered from it. And the songwriting is there. but it's the wrong style for Kiss as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. I agree
now,
with you.
Now, mind you, I named my daughter after one of the Kiss songs, which was Shandy.
Nice. Great song, I might add.
Yeah. And this was another positive to this, and I don't know how many people know this, but this was the second time that we saw Bob Kulick on a Kiss record.
Oh.
And he played on Naked City.
Ah, I did not
know
that.
Although he wasn't credited for it, yeah.
Did not know that. I do dig that, like, I like how, like, Ace was getting showcased more. Obviously, we all know, hey, the solo albums just had an anniversary yesterday. And we know, you know, after Ace's solo album, he got more airtime, you know, on these albums. So, you know, we see it on Dynasty and we see it on Unmasked. And I think that's really cool. I don't know, like, Torpedo Girl is kind of questionable. But the other songs, I think, are that he does are really good on that album. So it is cool to see Ace more involved, you know. All right, man. So my seven...
Cross-country with fire.
I've got Hotter Than Hell. I put it up a little bit higher than you did. And, you know, obviously everybody bitches about the production. You know, this album sounds like shit. And it really does compared to the debut sounds great. Like I said, aside from the slow renditions of the songs, I think the sound quality is great. And it's the same production team. I don't know why it sounds like crap for the second one, but it doesn't sound very good. But I gotta admit, man, over time, like, I don't know, I'm just used to it. Like, it doesn't really bother me that much. And I love the songs, especially side two. I think that's where the magic of this album starts. And I think you kind of alluded to this a little bit too, but you got All the Way, Strange Ways, Coming Home, Mainline. Those are just all songs that you don't hear a lot of in their set. You know, they don't pop up a lot, but they're great tunes. And one I got to throw out there that I never liked, Let Me Go Rock and Roll. I don't know. I just never cared for that song. But, I mean, obviously got Parasite. Lots of cool shit on Hotter Than Hell. It's a heavier record. It's a faster record. You know, Kiss is evolving, you know, album by album. And I think these are great kind of overlooked songs.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. Strange Ways is a phenomenal song.
So good.
And Mainline, I don't know why they didn't do any of these songs live.
Oh. Mainline is super cool. And it's funny how, I don't know, just like I said, you know, you kind of talked about this earlier with Peter. You know, when Peter's more involved and I know he doesn't write a lot of the songs, but he sings them. But it's just another dimension. You know, it kind of created that thing like they were always shooting for, like the Beatles. You know, everybody's got their own songs and everything or gets a chance to sing. And he always added a really cool dimension to the albums that he's on. I agree with you 100% on that one.
That's awesome.
What do you got for six?
So for number six, I'm going to go with Dress to Kill.
Okay. Awesome.
I don't really have anything bad to say about this per se, but I just think my ones that are above it, I just like a little more.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't, by the time this album came out, they haven't made it yet, so they still have something to prove, which is one of the things that I like about this album. The songwriting and the way that they're playing together, especially like songs like Lover All I Can, songs like that where they're just really tight, and I think they got really good chemistry here. There's a couple songs that I would have probably left off. Anything for My Baby.
Yeah.
There's a reason why that's not on any of the Greatest Hits albums.
Yeah.
But again, Getaway should have been played live.
Ooh, Getaway's awesome. Love it.
That was written by Ace, sang by Peter.
Yep.
And I think it wouldn't have been the song that it is if Ace had the guts to sing at that point. If he would have sang that song, it wouldn't be like as powerful as it is with Peter on vocals, for sure.
No. And I like the production of this album. It's kind of more of a clean one and more crisp. It's definitely a step up from Hotter Than Hell. I don't think, like you said, they still got something to prove. I don't even know if they're 100% there as a band in the studio yet. I think that's coming, but but yeah, it's I love it.
Definitely.
All right, number six. This one also may surprise people, but I don't care. I, like I said, I go against the grain. I say what I want, do what I feel. So. I got Love Gone at 6, and the reason I got Love Gone at 6, I just feel like it kind of fizzles out after a while. Like, you know, it starts off amazing. You know, I Stole Your Love, Got Love for Sale, Shock Me. I mean, these are some of their best songs. You know, obviously key moments on a couple of them, on a live two and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, Hooligan is cool. But I think Love Gun, once again, that's a song, let's face it, that song has been beaten to death. They've been playing that song since 1977. It's probably been played almost on every, I think it probably has been played on every tour. I don't ever want to hear that song again. And I think Gene has got, hold on, while we're on Paul, Then She Kissed Me. I hate it. I freaking hate it, man. I think it's the stupidest cover
ever. I'm going with you, man.
That's garbage. Hate it. Gene's songs, too, are kind of weird. You know, Christine 16, obviously, as we're getting older, is kind of a weird dynamic going on there. And it's a very repetitive song that really doesn't go anywhere. Almost Human is kind of like that, too, like for me. Like, I feel like you hear it, and it's like, oh, wow, there's this real evil Gene song. Like, it's going to be like God of Thunder Part 2, but it ends up just being kind of like a funk tune or something. I don't know. It just doesn't work. So I feel like Gene... I don't know, man. When Gene's on, it's awesome. But then when he's off, it sucks. So I feel like, and here's the problem, Johnny, that I think, and this is where I think about Destroyer and I think about Love Gun. I think when people look at them from afar and they don't dissect it song by song, they think of the iconic Ken Kelly album covers. They think of the awesome costumes that they brought out for each of these albums. They think about the live show, especially this one is no doubt. The most iconic live show is the 77 show in the gatefold sleeve. I mean, so I think like when you look at an era, you know what I mean? This kind of happens with Dynasty too. You either love the way they looked or you hate it. You know what I mean? And that affects how you perceive that album. And I think the perception of Love Gun is larger than life. No pun intended, right, for life too. But I don't know if you start picking apart like some of those songs that I talked about. I don't know. You know what I mean? They just don't resonate with me. I don't think they're some of Kiss's best. But like I said, I mean, it's iconic. It's got some strong stuff. But I don't know, man. That's where I got it. What do you got?
I'm going to have to disagree with you. I'm going to have to disagree with you on a couple of those things, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, man. You're going to get to it. What do you got for 5?
Number 5, I have Destroyer.
Nice. So you put that one up real high. All right, man, let's hear it. What do I have wrong about Destroyer? Let's hear it.
Now, I agree with you about Great Expectations and Best and Do You Love Me. I think those songs are crap, and if I never hear them again, I'm fine.
Right.
But Flame and Youth should have been an anthem.
Right. That's a cool one.
In my opinion.
Yeah, that's cool.
And Shout It Out Loud, I think, is an anthem, and I think, personally, I think it deserves to be an anthem. King of the Nighttime World, up until last year when I heard the original, I wasn't too excited to hear about it, to hear that song.
Yeah.
But once I heard the original version of it, and then I heard how Kiss redid it, and they were really faithful to the original, even though it was unheard of, really gave me a big appreciation for that song. Detroit Rock City, I mean, I jammed that with a whole bunch of guys. God of Thunder, I think I like the way that they play God of Thunder more in the Animalize era, because they sped it up a little bit. It's a slow and drawn out song, especially live, because Gene takes, you know, 20 minutes to spit blood or whatever. But honestly, I think from my youth, this was like one of the first 8 tracks I had as a child, and it's just the memories that I cherish the most, and that's why I gave it a 5.
You're not wrong, man. Flaming Youth is a cool song. And the cool thing that they busted out with Shout It Out Loud is the trade-off vocals. You know what I mean? I know I believe they do that on the first album. What song? I don't know. They definitely traded off a few songs on the first Kiss album. But it is cool to hear the trade-off vocals. It's a cool thing that pops up every once in a while on a Kiss album. So there are a lot of cool elements to the album. And I think, like I said, I really think they kind of nailed down the production thing when you brought in Bob Ezrin. and, you know, put in some weird sound effects, pianos, orchestration. You know, that was not even in their wheelhouse prior to him coming on board. So definitely a mammoth effort, no doubt.
Absolutely, and I think Bob Ezrin made the album too, because if you listen to Resurrection, mm-hmm. with all the Bob Ezrin stuff taken out, it's a snooze fest. You fall asleep listening to it. So
yeah.
I think that, and it could very well be because I've been listening to the real versions of it for 50 years, that these other versions, these new versions that we hear, it's just hard to listen to because you know stuff is missing from it.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
That's possible. Yeah, for sure.
All right. So this will be surprising. So for five, I got...
That pesky photographer keeps trying to catch Kiss off guard. Ace and Peter are intercepted.
Hey, Kiss, look this way! Nuts!
Then he tracks down Paul at a restaurant.
Come on, shucks! Hey, Gene, over here! Darn!
But Kiss has the last laugh. Kiss
Unmasked. I do love Unmasked. Let me just put it out there that I hate the production. I don't like the production on this one. You kind of alluded to it. You thought it sounded demo-ish. I think it sounds really thin. Almost reminds me of the way Crazy Nights sounds. Like, I feel the same way about Crazy Nights. Like, it's really poppy. It's really thin. I wish somebody would remix this in a more rocked-out version. Obviously, don't re-record the vocals, because nobody in Kiss can touch those vocals today. You know, don't touch those vocals. But I think there's a way to beef these bad boys up to sound a little bit more rocked out, because like you said, the songs are there. You know, maybe they weren't the right songs for Kiss, but I think maybe with the right spin on them, they might have been the right songs. You know, I think Is That You is cool. I know that's a cover, or not a cover, but it was written by somebody else. Shandy, I think, is a great slow tune. Naked Cities is so weird and cool, and it's got a lot of that eerie riff. You know, I just love it, man. It's just got that Gene Simmons evilness, just a little touch of evil. Talk to Me is great by Ace. Tomorrow, such a great tune. Once again, that will sound like it could have been on Paul Stanley's solo album. If it was maybe just produced a little bit harder, I think it would have been great. So I think these are great songs. And once again, not many people are going to agree with me, but I think that's, as a whole, this is a better written album than Love Gun. I feel like Love Gun's got some real strong moments and it's got some real weak moments. I don't see where this has a lot of weak songwriting moments, a lot of catchy tunes, very melodic songs. I just think they're just not performed in the Kiss manner, you know, that would make them, you know, more maybe accessible to like the average Kiss fan. So I love Unmasked. What can I say?
That's right. And I think this is definitely the era that us as kids started watching them live, and this is the beginning, first time we hear of Eric Carr, even though he didn't play on the album, but he played all of the live shows for this. And I remember watching Kids Are People Too.
Yeah, yep.
And Eric Carr comes out, and, you know, and this was right during Unmasked, so that created a hype for kids, but for the teenager Kiss fans, I mean, this was like a letdown to them, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and one thing I got to throw out there, even though it's nothing to do with the Unmasked album, but the tour, like the way that they do Detroit Rock City in Sydney, Australia, that's probably my favorite live rendition of it. Paul goes higher on the vocals. The drums are just way powerful and fast. I love how they do Detroit Rock City on the Unmasked tour. It's so cool.
I agree 100%. They should have recorded it that way for sure.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. Man, we're getting down to the nitty gritty here. What do you got for four?
Ace Frehley. The Kiss Awards, won by each of the four Kiss stars on Casablanca.
Oh, so you threw in one of those. Oh, so our numbers might not match up, so no problem. So you like it so much you had to throw it on there. So no, go ahead, man. I can't – nobody can dispute it. So what do you got?
I absolutely love this record. There's no throwaways on this album whatsoever. Rip It Out is – I mean, that's just an amazing opener for an album. Speeding Up to My Baby is a great follow-up to that. I think that Snowblind and Ozone gave a little bit of an anti-Kiss message, because Gene was always anti-drug and Paul was anti-drug.
Yep.
And he's talking about getting high and stuff, which I thought was kind of funny, because he was Gene had no control over this, so he's kind of poking fun at him.
Yeah.
Which is, I get the humor in that, and I thought that was really awesome when I was a kid. New York Groove is the first song that we heard from a Russ Ballard cover, and Ace done a few Russ Ballard covers mm-hmm. after that
yep.
on his solo albums and stuff, which I thought was really awesome. So you could see that he was really influenced by Russ. And then we end off the album with Fractured Mirror, and that was pretty much that was their second instrumental other than Red Love Thing from Kiss on their debut album. And I think Ace nailed it. I think this is by far the best thing that Ace ever put out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no disputing it. I for some reason, I kept the solo albums off. I'm curious now how my list would have looked if I was able to include the solo albums. I prefer Paul's a little bit over Ace's, but I got no problem with Ace's. I love, obviously, all the songs you mentioned, Rip It Out and New York Groove. Even New York Groove, I don't think it ever really gets old, you know. I always get excited, you know, like when you're listening to, like, classic rock radio or something or on a TV commercial and it pops on. It's like, yeah, go Ace. That's cool.
That's right.
So, all right, for my number four... I got Dressed to Kill, man. I love it. I think this is the best of the first three albums. I think it starts off just so solid. I love Room Service. Love Two Timer. Ladies in Waiting. Getaway. Those are all, like, you know, like we talk about, those songs that just are overlooked. They don't play them live. Well, they had those pretend live versions, right? On You Wanted the Best, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's them from 77. Oh, yeah, or 5 or whatever. Yeah, okay. But yeah, there's no way, cuz they're, you know, and once again, we got to talk about what's crazy. Even when you go through these albums, look how much their voices change, or how much their voices have changed over the years. I mean, Paul Stanley's voice went into a whole other dimension. You know what I mean? He got to such high levels of singing, you know, in the 80s he could sing so high, it was crazy. He really developed as a singer. Gene has never been regarded as an incredible singer, but his voice kind of navigates, you know, around. So sometimes he's got the demon growl. You look at albums like Unmasked and Crazy Nights, there's a parallel. I keep bringing that up. He doesn't have the demon growl on any of those songs, you know what I mean? He sings very clear, you know, or the way he sings World Without Heroes. So you know, their voices have changed a lot, and that's when it stands out like a sore thumb, like when they try to pass off those lost Alive tracks and Alive 2 tracks, they just don't work because you can tell they're re-recorded. Their voices changed a lot over the years.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
But I love Justin
and
Kill.
When they brought out that album and said, okay, this is Room Service from 1975, you can hear the 1995 Paul Stanley singing it.
Yeah. And once again, his voice was great. I mean, shit, his voice was awesome in 1995. But it aged. It was more mature. It sounded a lot lower register. Something about it is different.
Actually, I think his voice was better in 1995 than it was in 75.
It probably was, yeah.
If you listen to a lot of those bootlegs that were from 75 and it was live, some of those weren't that great. But if you listen to bootlegs from 1995, they were all good.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, for sure, man. You know, and once again, I think they're obviously, you know, they're professionals and they had a lot of practice, you know, through the years. And I think they probably never had any kind of vocal training when they first got going. And then obviously they probably had some formal training, especially Paul. He had to have. Gene, I don't know, because Gene really, like I said, it's like Alice Cooper. You know what I mean? I love the voice, but it's never going to be put up there with some of the greats, you know, like Bruce Dickinson or something like that. It's just a different kind of a voice.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a character. It's a character voice. And Kiss are characters. Let's face it. Okay. Number three, dude. What do you got?
Okay, so you said you put Paul Stanley's album in front of Ace's.
I would.
Well, so do I.
Paul Stanley.
So Paul Stanley comes in to me for number three.
Oh, cool.
Tonight You Belong to Me is absolutely, you know, that is a work of art. I love that song. I love this whole album.
Love it.
And It's All Right is actually makes it to our soul, my KLA tribute album.
Yes, I was so glad that I played bass on that one. I was so glad to play that because that song and Wouldn't You Like to Know Me, I love those two. Those are probably my two favorites.
Yes, yeah, definitely. But some of the other songs like Goodbye,
yeah,
you never heard Paul write songs like that. The way that the guitar is in that, it's just amazing. Bob Kulick is on this album as well. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, yeah, yep.
Personally, to me, even though there was no hits from this album, and Ace got the only hit from all four albums, I think this is a stronger album. I think this sounds like a Kiss record.
Yep.
And I think that this would have been a really good follow-up to Love Gun.
Yeah, yeah. You make up an interesting point, because I've always wondered, what if we took four of Paul's, two of Gene's, three of Ace's, one of Peter's, you know, and we made the 78 album? I think you would have had a real home run right there, you know. It's cool that you got four albums. Like I said, if Ace especially, you know, at that point you'd only heard, you know, two songs from him, Rocket Ride and Shock Me. So you didn't know really what he could do for a full album. But, man, I think one album of all of them working together with these songs, because let's face it, Gene has some great songs, and Peter isn't bad either, but they could probably, you know, do two or three, you know, Gene maybe three, Peter one, I'm saying, and you might have a complete album there. So
I think I like Peter's more than I like Gene's.
Uh-huh.
And it's not because Peter's is any better, but Gene is the demon.
Yeah.
And we get this album and it's full of lighthearted songs, and I was like, what is it?
Yeah, dude, you know, that's fun.
I expected an album full of God of Thunder, I guess, and yeah, didn't get it, so.
I guess that's the point.
When You Wish Upon a Star.
I guess that's the point, right? Like, you know, when you do a solo album, this is that time where you can break away and do something different than what you're known for, you know? And I think the problem, though, like you said, with Gene, and this happens a lot. It was funny. We just did a podcast about albums that were letdowns, and Psycho Circus came up for me. I thought that was a letdown. And one of the big things that let me down was Gene's output from this album, because I didn't feel like I've got the demon. Like, this is it, man. You are the demon again, right? And I got We Are One, and I got Journey of a Thousand Years. I'm not saying they're horrible songs, but they're not what I'm looking for on like a classic, supposedly, right, album of the original guy. So, see, Gene, he falls into these traps where he just does these bullshit songs that don't fit into who he is, and I always think it falls flat, personally.
Yeah, yeah, and I think those were also leftovers from Carnival of Souls.
Oh, big time.
So the makeup thing wasn't even in their minds yet.
Yeah. Yep.
So he wasn't the demon yet, and it comes through in the songs. You can tell.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. Well, what I've got for number three:
Gene Simmons, Peter Criss, Paul Stanley, Ace Frehley, Kiss. Rock and Roll Over.
Is Rock and Roll Over, and I think this is the best album for me of the original four guys. I love it. And one thing that I really love, you talked about Tonight You Belong to Me, where it goes like from the slow to the heavy, like the soft intro, and This Is How I Want You is. And I think that's a cool dynamic. You know, Paul always nails that. It's got that real, you know, chilled out beginning, and then, you know, whatever. He's just rocking out, you know. And I love how they do that. And I Want You. Ladies Room is cool. Take Me. Love Them, Leave Them. Mr. Speed. Everybody loves Mr. Speed, man. That, you know, that always is one of those forgotten deep tracks that people, you know, people just love it, but it's never really been a live song or anything like that. But I love Rock and Roll Over. I think this is Kiss firing on all cylinders. It's not as overproduced with this big production like Destroyer is, but I think it's maybe not as bloated or like with weirder stuff that misses the mark than Love Gun does. Like I said, that's just my perception, but I love Rock and Roll Over.
I actually put Rock and Roll Over in at number two.
Oh, I like when we do the back-to-back. All right, what do you like so much about Rock and Roll Over?
There are some sleepers in there. Baby Driver is an amazing song.
Yep.
Amazing song. And Ladies Room, I know they did it on Alive 2, but they kind of dropped it after that, and I think that's a really strong song.
Yep.
It's Simmons at his best.
Yep.
And going back to the Gene Simmons solo album, See You in Your Dreams is on there with Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick playing the guitar solo.
Yeah.
On Rock and Roll Over, it's Ace Frehley on guitar, and it's just got that Kiss feel to it.
Yeah.
And I really, really dig the jam that they really got into with that song.
Yep.
Making Love is one of the songs that every time I pick up my guitar is probably one of the first songs that I play. Hard Luck Woman is the last song I'll ever play. That to me is the throwaway.
Yeah, yep.
Is the throwaway, and that's why it didn't make it to number one, is Hard Luck Woman.
Yep.
But I think this is a really, really strong album. It comes on strong with I Want You, and it ends strong with Making Love.
Yeah.
It yep. Take Me, Calling Dr. Love, and all the songs in between, minus Hard Luck Woman, I think this is a masterpiece.
You know, and I'm so glad you mentioned Dr. Love, and I think Dr. Love kind of gets a bad break because it's just so overplayed. You know, once again, it's probably been in the set for almost every tour since it came out. But one thing I always notice about Dr. Love is, and you as a guitar player can appreciate this, is the guitar solo. I think it's just so cool. It's not overplayed. It's not underplayed. It just fits in that space perfectly, and it just makes complete sense, you know? And it just shows you, like, how great Ace Frehley was and is, you know? But he really is a tasteful player, you know what I mean? I don't know if that was all his creation or somebody said, hey, hit this, that note here, there, whatever. But I love what he does. And he does it in others. He does it a lot. So I think back in the 70s, his creativity and his sensibility of what fits was spot on, you know? Now I feel like, I mean, hate to say it, but, you know, he's just got his ace-isms that he throws out there that, oh, that's Ace. But I don't know if he ever has recaptured, like, what he, like, when he does an album today, I don't think he has what he used to do then. He was in a different mindset back in the 70s. I love it.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with who you're with, too, right?
Yeah.
And you've got these four guys, and together it was magic.
Yep.
Just like the Beatles was, just like the Stones, you got the right chemistry and it's magic.
Yep.
That's why Dynasty and Unmasked fell short for me, because it wasn't the four yep. members writing together. It was two or three writing together.
Yep.
And that makes all the difference in the world. One of the things that I like about Calling Dr. Love, and it, you really have to listen close, but that evil gene comes out in it at the beginning of the song.
Yeah.
Calling Dr. Love.
Yeah.
And it's really, really quiet, but it resonates, and you can hear it. And if there is an album from Australia called Kiss the Singles, and it's got a bunch of gold records on the front cover, and on that particular mix of it, you could really hear him saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only time you that it's really prominent and out front. Everywhere else, it's pretty much buried in the music.
Yeah.
So if anybody can dig out that version and listen to that version from the single, it's going to blow your mind.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I always dig the low Gene voice in the chorus that pops up around the second chorus. We obviously are familiar with this. We've done this song a couple times, and I feel like right now, like as I told you, I have COVID again. So I could do, my voice is all torn up. I could do the Dr. Love. You know, I could do the Gene cow voice, you know, Dr. Love. So. I love it.
You know, with that part missing, it's a different song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It doesn't sound the same.
You know, if you just had the high vocals and not his low, flat vocal in that part of the song, it changes the whole dynamic of the song for sure.
Yep. So my number two, I'm assuming, is not on your list at all. Because you threw the solos in there, which, hey, there was no rules. You can do whatever you want. But I didn't. So I've got a different album that probably won't hit your list. And this is an album... This probably for you is missing some guys, because not a couple guys aren't on this album, but I really like what they were going for.
Creatures of the Night, the new album from Kiss, the masters of metal.
It's Creatures of the Night, and I think when we get Gene Simmons fully engaged, fully in the zone, you've got a home run. And this happens a lot. A lot of people look to Revenge. As a home run for Kiss. That's because you've got Gene back into the fold, really being Gene, you know. And when he's in the zone and Paul's in the zone, you got a winning Kiss album. And I think that's what you get with Creatures of the Night. I think for me, This is Gene's and Eric's, one of their shining moments. I think Gene's voice is so demon, so gnarly, so ripped up. His bass playing, hey, once again, I don't even know if it's him all the time, but whatever it is, it sounds cool. And Eric Carr, I don't care, man. I love Peter, but man, this is my favorite drum album out of any album that's out there. The way those drums sound, they just sound like cannons. They just sound like explosions. I don't know what it is, man. Even something simple as I Love It Loud. You know, it's just, you know, all that reverb or whatever the hell they got on it. It just sounds so good, you know. I love War Machine. It's one of my favorite Kiss songs. I Love It Loud. It's cool. Killer. Rock and Roll Hell. I feel like Paul sometimes suffers on heavier albums. You know, Paul, like we said, he kind of fits in better with the stuff that's on a solo album. He like does that power pop stuff, the catchy stuff, but I think Paul holds his own on Creatures of the Night. The title track, Danger, Keep Me Coming, I Still Love You. So I think I mentioned every song because I like them all, and there's only nine. So yeah, man, Creatures of the Night, I know it's really tough not to have Ace on there. I don't know if Ace's style would have fit. Maybe, we'll never know. I would have liked to have heard what he could have done on Creatures. But I'm glad that Peter's not on it, because like I said, I think Eric Carr really had something to prove. After The Elder was not, you know, I don't know, it just wasn't, you know, like a total Kiss album. It was a little disjointed. But this is Kiss, you know, for the 80s kind of metal version of Kiss. I love it, man. I love it.
You know, even though the album flopped, which it did, I think that it has one of the best Kiss songs ever written on it, and that's I Still Love You.
Yeah.
Paul's live version of that, to this day, gives me chills.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know the part that I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Rock and Roll Hell, which is a cover of a Canadian band called BTO.
Yep.
If you listen to the original version, you'll think, why did Gene Simmons ever cover this song? It's horrible. But they made it into their own song, and it's an amazing song.
It is.
Brian Adams co-wrote some songs with them on this album.
Yep.
And I gotta agree with you. It's a great album. It didn't make my list at all, but it's definitely up there.
Yeah, it's a great one. I think I know what your number one is.
You think it is?
It's gotta be Love Gun.
It has to be. Absolutely. Now, what is it for me that made this one my favorite? I think it has a lot to do with Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park.
Go with his scurvy crew steaming close behind, and I do mean steaming.
Gene's clean.
A pussycat. Almost.
Hi, Curly.
I think that's what did it for me. That came out in 1978. I was 7 years old. I had this record, but and I've seen them live at this point, but now I'm seeing them on my TV screen in my living room. Okay? You've got the songs I Stole Your Love, but when Ace Frehley came out and he's walking down those lightning bolts to shock me, I mean, that just blew my mind.
Yeah.
The very first time I ever heard Ace Frehley singing, that was just absolutely mind-blowing for me. The other songs that were on there, Got Love for Sale is totally overlooked.
Yep.
It's one of those songs that it's never been played live. It's never been on any compilations whatsoever. And you don't hear anybody talking about it. And I don't know why. I think it's one of Gene's, you know, one of his best songs out of that era. I put it over Christine 16 because I think, well, it's got a kind of a weird message. right? Plastercaster and Almost Human. I love those songs when I was a kid, and they still do it for me.
Nice.
Then She Kissed Me. I agree with you 100%. That song sucks. It shouldn't have been covered, but they needed to make a temp song for the album, right?
Yep. For sure, for sure.
Now, Peter Criss and Stan Penridge writing together, they always did some soft music. You've heard Chelsea, you've heard the solo album.
Yeah.
It's more like big band music. For Hooligan to fit on a rock and roll album, they must have went back into the studio and reshaped it to make it into a rock and roll song. And I think they did an amazing job.
Yep.
Like, I think we did a cover of that song for YouTube, did we not?
We did. Yeah, a lot. We go through these. There's a lot of ones. Like, I think of Dr. Love, and I think of Hooligan, and then, like I said, all the different ones that end up on the KLA tribute album. So, yeah, we've had some hands-on experience with some of these songs.
Oh, definitely. And one of the songs that gets a lot of hatred, and I don't know why, is Tomorrow and Tonight. The guitar work in that and the harmonies in that, I just think that to me is another masterpiece. Hmm. I think that Paul Stanley was in true form for that album, and I think Ace Frehley was too.
Yeah.
So my top three songs on this album is Got Love for Sale, Shock Me, and Tomorrow and Tonight. I love those songs more than any of the other songs that are on there. I know that Love Gun comes really high on your list, but personally, to me, I think Got Love for Sale and Tomorrow and Tonight comes a little higher than that.
Yeah.
For me.
Oh yeah, for sure, man. Well, all right. So you know what my number one is? You must.
Well, let me just go back and take a look. I'm trying to remember all the ones that you said.
So I'll give you a hint. Let's see if my voice can do it. Do 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 do. I can still
That's
do it.
Number one, eh?
I still got it. Yeah, dude. I don't know what it is. I think for me, I can be like, okay, so I get where you're coming from with a lot of stuff because you were there, right? I didn't get into Kiss till like 86, okay? So for me, it could be taken anyway. I wasn't there. I didn't see Phantom of the Park. I was only two. You know, I missed it. You know what I mean? So this stuff, it could go either way. You know, basically when I went back, I bought all the albums probably between, you know, from 86 to 88, I probably was just buying them all. And then at that point, I had all of them. So Dynasty, I think for me, I really dig the Dynasty era. I dig the costumes. I dig the whole thing.
I love the costumes.
Yeah.
I love
the tour, the live stage. I obviously, it kind of bleeds into the Unmasked stuff, too. I love all that. But I think this one, here's where I feel that there's differences. So for Dynasty versus Unmasked, I think the production's way better on Dynasty. I don't know what it is, but it feels more like a rock album. You know, I know there's really only maybe one or two disco-y type songs. I think you've got I Was Made for Loving You, which, you know, hey, it served its purpose. It was a big hit. That's what they wanted to do. And, you know, and I think that was coming from their label and even in Paul's mind, you know, let's mix the two biggest things, Kiss and disco. They did it, you know. But, you know, they kind of hurt their reputation in the process. And then Dirty Livin', my wife loves that one. She loves Dirty Livin'. And I don't even mind it. I think it's okay, but it's not very Kiss-like. But other than that,
right.
And you named some of these. Now, well, here's one thing, man. You don't like Sure Know Something. I love Sure Know Something, and I love it even more on Unplugged. I think it's just a cool. I love the chorus. Chorus is such a hook. You know, I love that hook of the chorus. And I love the bass. As a bass player, you talk about like when you strap on the guitar, you play Making Love. I like to jam on Sure Know Something because it's just a cool bass line. I'm sure Gene doesn't play it on the album. I'm sure Paul does. But
yeah.
The songs that I really dig, once again, is going to be the deeper tracks. I love Charisma. Charisma is such a cool Gene song. You know, we talk about Demon Gene, but we talk about the sexual innuendo Gene, too. There's a lot of that, and I think he nails it on Charisma. And I love X-Ray Eyes, too. I think the cool thing about X-Ray Eyes is it also has that kind of almost like an eerie riff, almost the same kind of thing that Naked City does, you know, like X-Ray Eyes. You know, I like that. And Magic Touch is cool. All the Ace stuff is decent. Hard Times, Save Your Love. Once again, not a huge fan of 2000 Man, but I do like when they play it on the Dynasty show, you know, like from Largo. Does work.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And I think what I've noticed too, Johnny, is that, like, I know you weren't huge into this album, but I think, like, they're becoming, like, more sophisticated songwriters, if you know what I'm trying to say. Like Love Gun's really cool, and it's more raw, but I feel like they're really trying hard to write, like, pop rock, you know what I mean? And I like it, you know what I mean? And I feel like once they get to this point, this is kind of the blueprint that they follow all throughout the 80s for the most part. You know, when if you look at like albums like Crazy Nights and Hot in the Shade and stuff. I feel like a lot of that songwriting harkens back to stuff they started doing on Dynasty. So I love it. I don't think it's a complete disco sellout, you know, like some people do. I think it's a couple tracks, but once you get past those, and I actually like I Was Made for Loving You. I don't even care. Especially the way they do it on Live 3, and we get back to those live renditions, you know. That's what's cool. These songs have had taken on a life of their own, whether it be on Unplugged, a Live 3 with real heavy renditions, the bootlegs like Sydney and Rio, Brazil, you know. You could go back and listen to all these different ones, the Alive 1, Alive 2, and find just cool versions. And these songs like take on new life. So, I don't know, man. I look at Dynasty, I think, as the complete package. I like the songs. I like the production.
I think Save Your Love is I love that album, or I love that song. I think that one is overlooked. And I might think that is his best solo that he ever did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I put that solo above Shock Me, believe it or not.
Yeah. That is a cool one. And you know what I like, too? And it's really... this one almost reminds me of the way Dr. Love is. It's really subtle. The guitar solo in Charisma, I think there's a lot of backward stuff in it, and it's just really subtle, but it's almost kind of eerie sounding, and it fits the song. So, like I said, once again, I thought Ace was getting real creative, you know, as you got to the mid-70s to the later 70s. He was just in the zone. I love most of the solos that he does in this era, and it always seemed to fit. It was very tasteful. It wasn't like shredding. You know, that's the kind of bullshit that came after the fact with somebody like Mark St. John. I can't listen to that shit. I hate it. But what Ace does, that's the real stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The Hard Times, I mean, it had some silly stuff in it, like the whistles and the...
Yeah.
You know, that could have been... It could have been a better song if they got rid of all that stuff. And that was the stuff that was gearing to kids.
Yeah.
Right? He was talking about how hard the times were, and then he put the silly stuff in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they do the same thing on Unmasked. There's some weird sounds and keys, and even something like... like, if we go back to, like, What Makes the World Go Round, that's got an awesome Paul Stanley, like, typical type of a verse, and then it's got to go to that, like, disco beat in the chorus, and I feel like it kind of ruins the song to an extent. I like that song, but I'm like, man, I would love to have heard the chorus if it just was a straight-up rock beat versus that disco beat, you know? So, they were dabbling, man. They were pretty much, they took the taste of fame and success, and they wanted more, and they were going to try to get it. It didn't work out for them, but, you know, in retrospect, you've got some cool music to look back on for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Appreciate you having me on here, man. We got to do this again with the non-makeup era, I think.
Yeah, definitely, man. I'm so glad we got to talk about these. I've been wanting to talk about these for a long time. I mean, geez, I've been doing the podcast for about 3 years, and I've just been waiting for the right time to do this. And I thought, you know, to talk about the KLA project was a perfect, you know, stimulus to get something like this going. And then to dive into these albums, like I said, you're a big fan for a long time. You've played a lot of these songs. You know them inside and out. So this came out real good, man. Appreciate your time.
Hey, no worries. I actually even have Kiss tattoos. I met them a few times and had them autograph all their the original four signatures are in my arm, and a huge portrait of Paul Stanley's in my arm too. So.
And you got a lot of killer guitars. You got a lot of the original guitars of Ace and Bruce and stuff like that. They're models.
Yeah, I do, and I have three guitars that I bought straight from Bruce Kulick too.
Oh, that's awesome! That is so cool. Yeah. All right, brother. Well, like I said, I'm going to have some free time this week. I figured I might as well get some podcasts in. I know we talked about it before, so I'll be sitting home for the next 5 days. So, and I don't really feel all that sick. I don't feel that sick. So, like I said, I had it in January, and I was pretty sick then. But this time it's pretty mild. So, yeah, I'll just I'll screw around for this week and get some podcasting in.
Well, you get better soon, my friend.
All right, dude. I appreciate it. Have a good night.
Thanks, you as well. Take care.
Talk to you. Well, that was great. Talking Kiss with Johnny. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Rock on!